Good morning, guys.
Oh, good morning, Ben.
Okay, so this is actually the last year for 2 weeks. Tomorrow I should be somewhere in the morning and then leaving for America. And who knows what we'll be doing. So because it's the last year, I'm going to bump up Rashi. Rashi's supposed to be tomorrow, won't be here tomorrow. She's supposed to be Thursday, won't be here Thursday, and I won't be here tomorrow. So let's discuss Rashi from Parshas Vayigash. So the great encounter between Yaakov and Paro. We've forgotten about Yaakov a little bit. He's taken a backseat to the furious struggle of the brothers to Yosef and the machinations and Yehuda and his successful attempts to save the family, beginning of a Yigash. But any time there's a confrontation or an encounter between one of our avos and an international figure in Sefer Bereishis, that's a resonant moment. We think it's just a throwaway. Oh, by the way, this is Yosef's father. It's parent-teacher's night. Oh, you're Yosef's father. Now, you taught him everything. Now we know where he got his good genes. And you know, they exchange a little niceties, have a rugalach, and Yaakov moves on. But this is an encounter between Yaakov Avinu and Paro. This is deeply resonant based on Parshas Lech Lecha, Avram's encounter with Paro. And it's deeply foreshadowing of Parshas Shmos, Sefer Shmos, where our people and Moshe are going to encounter Paro. So you can't just read the encounter between Yaakov and Paro as, oh, by the way, you know, here's Yosef's father. This is Mr. Yosef's father joining in the picture. So it's a very brief encounter. I want to discuss how Rashi interprets two very iconic words. Because Yaakov approaches Paro, and he gives him a bracha. Now, brachos in Sefer Bereishis are hard fought. People kill each other for brachos. People murder each other for brachos. They sell each other into slavery for brachos. And here Yaakov freely just delivers a bracha twice. Vayavi Yosef, es Yaakov aviv, vayamideh lefnei Paro, vayivarech Yaakov es Paro. He gives him a bracha. Not only that, when he leaves, he's got a lot of extra brachas. Bracha for you, bracha for you. Everyone gets a bracha. When he leaves, vayivarech Yaakov es Paro, vayitzim lefnei Paro. So this is a little bit weird. Because brachos are very, very hard to achieve. And by the way, if I failed to mention what next week's parsha is, Birchas Yaakov. Those are very important brachos. So that's why Rashi twice tries to ratchet it down a little bit. It doesn't really mean the game of bracha. Yivarech Yaakov, he she'ila shalom, kiderech kol hanirim lefnei ha'malachim lefrakim. What it basically means, he says, hey, how's it going? What's happening? What's up? What's up? How's it in South Africa? Now, in those days, when you greeted a king, you didn't just say, how are you? You said something nice. How are you? You should have a good day. How are you? Your kingship, your empire should be stable. That was the way you greeted kings as part of protocol. When you greeted a king, you gave a bracha. And when you departed for a king, you delivered a bracha. But this word, vayivarech, shouldn't be confused with the other term or the other meaning of vayivarech in Sefer Bereishis, which is delivering legacy brachos, long-term brachos from Hashem, varechecha baruch, vayei bracha. Anyone who passed by Paro, Yaakov is every man. There are other people in this entourage. They also passed by Paro. They also said nice things to Paro. This isn't Yaakov delivering the brachos that have been so carefully safeguarded not to fall into the wrong hands, because these are clearly the wrong hands. They're not just other hands, like some mysterious person on the road that Yaakov delivers a bracha to. This is paramount Mitzrayim. We've seen what type of society this is morally. We've seen what type of society this is sexually. We've seen what type of society this is theologically. We've already seen the Chartumim, the very foreboding mention of the Chartumim, because they're basically the magicians and they control this ancient Egyptian black magic-based religion. So we know what type of society. So there's a double problem here. Not only is Yaakov freely handing out brachos to people who just happen to meet on the roadside, but Yaakov's delivering brachos where they shouldn't be delivered, to the cesspool of paganism and sexual promiscuity and immorality and slave traders. So it's not really a bracha. It's just, that's what you did when you met a king, when you departed. Famous Rashi and Rosh Hashanah. Why is Shmini Atzeres called Pazar Kashav? Why are the six things that differ from Shmini Atzeres as opposed to Sukkot? One of them is bracha. Kuf Shin Beis. Now, there can't be Shechianu because Zman, Zayin, is already Shechianu. So what is bracha? Rashi says bracha means that on Shmini Atzeres, the entire people would give a bracha to the king. Why would they give a bracha to the king in Yerushalayim or Shmini Atzeres? Because it was the last Yom Tov. And during our three Yom Tovim, part of Aliyah L'Regel is learning with our Rebbe. Who is our national Rebbe? The Melech. How do we know the Melech's the national Rebbe? When did his position as a Rebbe come to the fore? Once every 7 years, when he taught us Torah. according to many Achronim, they didn't just teach us Torah once every 7 years, but it was classic. Every Yom Tov, you'd get together and read Koheles or Shir HaShir or Muksiv or Mor Tanach. And in Hakeel, it was more of a public setting. This halacha, you can't leave your Rebbe without giving a bracha. You give a bracha to your Rebbe. It's a way of saying goodbye. And if to mechaver, you varach also. It doesn't mean you sat there and you delivered the brachas. The word bracha has two meanings. On the one hand, it means delivering the legacy brachas and sefer brachas. On the other hand, it means when you see a king, you greet him with a bracha, not just a king, other people, but certainly a king, and you depart with a bracha. So twice Rashi says it. On the second Rashi, that was the first Rashi, he she'el ha-shalom kiderach kol hanirim. The second Rashi, kiderach kol haniftarim. And when you walk away from people, you give a bracha. According to the second shot, it's not really a second shot. What bracha did he give him? The Nile should magically rise to your ankles. Okay, so fine. You want to have a magic show with the Nile. If you want to impress people with the Nile. But this isn't the brachos that we've seen in Toldos. This isn't the brachos that we've seen in Vayechi. Don't get worried. The brachos aren't being wasted or aren't being distorted to power Melech Mitzrayim. Okay. Then there's another interesting, well, I don't know how much time we have, but well, maybe we'll come back to this. But there's a very interesting, very few people pay a lot of attention to the end of Vayigash, because it's very undramatic, it's very technical, and it seems to have very little to do with the Jewish people. There's a bargaining that takes place, but if you look carefully, it's a reverse bargaining. If you go to a marketplace, normally the seller says, okay, it's 10 shekel. And you say, okay, how about 7 shekel? And he'll say, how about 9? You say, so he's trying to bargain you up, and you're trying to bargain him down. Imagine going to the marketplace saying, I'll give you 10 shekel. He says, no, 7. Okay, I'll give you 15. He says, no, give me... Not a really good bargaining session, right? Backwards bargaining. Sounds like there's a backwards bargaining taking place with Yosef and the people of Egypt who are starving for food. So what do they tell him? They say, Batito makesef, there's no money. Lachem ein baretz. Yosef's got all the money. Yosef's the mafioso. He's got everything. And Yosef says, you know what, give me your cattle. Ve'aviris b'kneim el Yosef, itim lechem asusim. But now they've given their cattle and they still don't have food. So they say, Bilti im givi asenu v'ad masenu. So now it's getting a little bit ominous. We're going to sell our bodies and our land. Givi asenu v'ad masenu. Lama namus le'necha. Let's be ni'anachnu v'ad masenu. Avadim le'paro v'tein zer v'nechye v'lo namus. So they're suggesting national slavery. They're suggesting the entire people become slaves to one man. So what happens? Va'ikin Yosef is called mas mitzrayim le'paro. So Yosef purchases the land. What happened to the Eved? I mean, a double offer. We'll be Avadim, and we'll sell you our lands. This is multiply the lands. And then he resettles the people, just in case you think he forgot about the people. So what happened to slavery? So I think two things, and I'll read you the Rashi. I mean, it comes from the Pesukim. I'll read you the Rashi, this happened before. Yosef has an aversion to slavery. He doesn't want people to be slaves. And it comes out clearly from the Pesukim. Rashi mentions it, but you don't need Rashi. I just was reading the Rashi. So it's in the Pesukim. Rashi's smiling, telling the Pesukim. Why does he have an aversion to slavery? So first of all, morally, slavery in the ancient world, slavery was horrific. You weren't a butler, you weren't a plower, you weren't a prison worker. So you lived in degraded conditions. They were the only thing I can compare it to in the modern day is there were two types of camps in Germany. There were death camps like Treblinka, and then there were concentration camps like Auschwitz. Auschwitz was not a death camp. Auschwitz was, well, Birkenau. At some point it became a death camp. But there were camps in which the purpose of the Germans was to work human beings to the bone, sap out every possible ounce of energy and productivity until they basically died of exhaustion, starvation, sickness, illness. Basically, to objectify human beings, why should I kill you if I can take every ounce of your energy and put you in the workforce, and put you in the fields, put you in the forest, have you build railroads, have you build munitions? That's what Eved was. Eved were chattel. They were not treated with any shred of human dignity, any shred of human identity. They were treated just as productivity tools. They're tools. And it was really horrific. Unfortunately, it was necessary because they didn't have technology. And they needed human labor in order to accomplish that, which we, Baruch Hashem, can accomplish today through technology and machines and ingenuity. But already in Sefer Bereishis, you're having a foreshadowing of one of the major messages of Sefer Shemot. Hashem does not want slaves. Hashem does not want people and must to be enslaved. There are slaves maybe in the domestic setting. The domestic setting is more person to person, more taking care of children, taking care of horses, taking care of stables. But in the national setting, where it becomes depersonalized, then it becomes concentration camp style. Then it becomes basically moving human beings, slave traders, slave markets. And of course, it's not just that Yosef is taking a moral stand, but Yosef also has personal trauma because he lived that life. And he was rescued from that life. And Baruch Hashem, it sounded like his slave career wasn't as harsh. He was more of a butler and a foreman and a warden in the prison. So he wasn't a backbreaking slave. He wasn't sitting there on the boats rowing for weeks at a time through the ocean. He wasn't sitting there endlessly grinding wheat on the millstone. So Yosef has an aversion to slavery, and he's just basically purchasing. And of course, this foreshadows Sefer Shemos. And which Rashi does this? So the Rashi. Vatihi aretz leparo, chaf. Vatihi aretz leparo, Rashi says, kinuyla. He purchased the land, but not the people. Now, you already see this aversion and this backwards bargaining in the end of, say, Parshas Mikkei, it's the beginning of Vayigash. Because who offers widespread slavery to Yosef? Yehuda. In the end of Mikkei, where they're all caught red-handed with their hand in the cookie jar, Benjamin's hand in the cookie jar, Yehuda's got an interesting proposal. He says, "Hinenu avadim ladani gam anachnu gam ashenim tzagavir biado." Yosef says, "No, no, no. I only want one slave. I don't want 12 slaves." Now, it may have been part of the ruse. It may not have been the moral stand. You don't really know whether this was Yosef. And there are many layers to this. What is Yosef really feeling? What does he want the brothers to think? What's part of the manipulation? But at least the way we read the pasuk, Yosef continually is anti-slavery. He's an abolitionist. Those are the people in America who fought against slavery. They're called abolitionists, to abolish slavery. Abolish means levatel, avdut. So he was an abolitionist. And you see it very clearly in the end of the parsha. You don't need Rashi. Rashi stresses it by saying, kinuyla. So it's just an interesting reverse bargaining. We'll all be slaves. You know what? Just give me the land. I'll move you to certain locations. It's more sustainable, so I can give a country of slaves. It seems like you're augmenting Paro's power and position. At a certain point, the country's going to collapse. We have a country of slaves. It has to be sustainable. Okay, one final Rashi, and nothing too deep, but something to think about. There's an encounter between Yosef's brothers and Paro that could go sideways, and Yosef wants to make sure it heads in the right direction. What I mean sideways, they could be drafted into the army. Drafted into the army, first of all, Yosef fears for their physical well-being, perhaps their moral well-being, but it sounds like what Yosef is primarily concerned with is their cultural assimilation. As we know, armies are cultural assimilators. That's why people serve in the army in Israel. You become more part of the culture. You learn the language. You serve with other people. You leave your country. You leave your family. You leave your home. Remember, in our day, you come home every Shabbos. Those days, warriors would leave for 2 years and come back after fighting in foreign lands. It's not we think, oh, you're a paid soldier. See on Shabbos, kissing goodbye to the kids, come home for some eggs and ham. Or, I mean, You're gone for 2 years. You're gone for 5 years. So you know, family life, and you live your life with drunken soldiers in the fields and whatever else entails. So Yosef wants to make sure that there's no assimilation. So he plans this. He says, by the way, tell him you're shepherds, and therefore you'll live. And he doesn't say it because he's afraid of their life. He says, "Bavur tishvu, it's Goshen. Oh, you're shepherds. If you're shepherds, not only will you not be soldiers, but Egyptians hate shepherds. Egyptians have the cooties. They're allergic to shepherds. Oh, you're a shepherd? You go live with the lepers." The Goshen is for lepers and shepherds, right? Here it rhymes. You know? All those people live with the people we can't get too close. The leopard, shepherds, the people with plagues. He goes to sit over there. Yosef's aiming to create segregation. And this Harashi knows that U'miksei echav lakach hamisha anashim, Yosef took the five weakest. That's the machlokas between the Bavli and the Medrash Eretz Yisrael, who the weak ones were. Well, the weak ones were the people that got their name doubled by Moshe's brachas. The weak ones are then the Moshe didn't mention the brachas twice, whatever. But Yosef took the weaklings, okay? Raise your hand if you're weak. Five people raise their hand and says, okay, you're coming to Paro. Just, don't eat for a couple of days and limp into Paro. He's trying to fool Paro. He's trying to convince Paro. Anyway, it succeeds. They meet Paro. He asks them what their jobs are, what their profession is. They say, we're roei tzon. Paro falls for their trick. Okay, so Eretz Mitzrayim lefonecha he b'meitav haaretz hoshev esavicha v'yasechecha yesh v'beretz Goshen. And by the way, now that you told me that you're such good shepherdsmen, if any of you are really excellent at shepherding, I'd like you to be my shepherd. Which, by the way, is really Yaakov's legacy, to be the shepherds for others. So I'd like you to be, if you have, I'm skipping one word, if you have good shepherds, I'll read the words in a moment, then v'samtam sarei mikne al asher li. I have a hard time finding shepherds. It's not exactly a good profession for a good Egyptian boy. Good Egyptian boys now become shepherds because we hate shepherds. They become, I don't know, magicians, doctors, accountants, whatever. So good. I can't find too many shepherds. I need the Jews to be my shepherds. So if you have some good shepherds, send them my way. It's like Trump. I'll hire them. But how does he describe the shepherds of skill that he's looking for? Fascinating. You just run right by it. V'im yadata v'yesh bam anshei chayel. If you've got good shepherds, what do you say? Chayel doesn't mean shepherds. Chayel means warriors. Okay, so Rashi highlights, says, by the way, this word chayel doesn't mean warriors. It means people of skill, like in Rus. So Rashi says, "V'yeshbam anshei chayel b'kian b'uman asam l'ros tzon." People that are expert. Chayel here doesn't mean warriors. A little bit of a Freudian slip. Pharaoh was really looking for soldiers. And that's how Rashi knows the entire cultural face-off. Because at no point does Pharaoh ever say he wants soldiers. Yosef may be cooking this up. But Yosef really knows what's on Pharaoh's mind. Pharaoh can't say it. And it slips out when he says, I want talented shepherds, people of chayel. So he says, okay, the real conversation was about good shepherds, but we know what Pharaoh wanted. And there may be some undertones of a militant, bellicose culture as opposed to a culture of shepherds. Right? One thing we have in Sefer Bereishis is clearly people who don't like going to war. The two times our avos go to war, they're hesitantly dragged into war. Right? Avram should have joined the war earlier. He only joins the war when it's absolutely necessary, last minute, because there's no choice because Lot has been taken captive. He's not a bellicose person. There's no warmongering. And of course, Yaakov is not happy about the war between Levi and Shimon and Shechem, as we see then, as we see later. Even though in the end, ironically, we find out in Parshas Vayechi that he actually joins the war. In Parshas Yishlach, we don't know that he joins the war. But in Parshas Vayechi, what does he say about Shechem when he delivers it to Yosef? Asher lakachti, you know the song, Asher lakachti mi'ed ha'mari, v'charbi u'v'kashti. So it sounds like he's actually part of the war effort, even though he's opposed to the war. But we're not warmongering. We don't want war, we don't try to go to war for land. We're not interested, of course, when we enter Eretz Yisrael a little bit later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will command us, and that's a specific command from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and the undertones are not just cultural. Will there be soldiers living in foreign lands with women and wine, killing away from the families, or will they be in the land of Goshen? But the subcontext is also, will there be warmongers, or will there be shepherds? What type of profession, what type of culture are we trying to build? Not just a question of integration versus assimilation. So the three interesting Rashis. One is Yaakov's not giving out any brachas to Pharaoh. He's saying, hi, how are you? They're exchanging business cards, maybe having a few cocktails, but no one's giving any brachas to Pharaoh. Number two is Yosef is bargaining down the Egyptians. They're offering their lands and their slavery, their indebtedness. And Yosef's saying, I don't want slaves. I'm not turning this country into... This is opportunity to be the greatest slave owner in the history of mankind. He could own hundreds of thousands of slaves in a minute because they have no food to eat. And instead, he comes up with a different plan. A plan of distribution, a plan of everyone owning the land. Maybe it sounds like a little communism, but he's moving people into different areas so that they can live and survive. And this is Yosef's personal trauma for being an Eved. He doesn't want, we don't want Avadim. The Torah describes Avadim, but that is not the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The human being should lord and strip other human beings of their freedom and, of course, their dignity. And finally, there's this conversation in Yaakov between Yosef and Paro, and we really know what's happening behind the scenes because of this Freudian slip. Because Paro says, oh, by the way, you're shepherds. That's great. If any warrior shepherds... And send them my way. And a soldier shepherds. I meant shepherds. Send them my way. Anshei Chayel. Okay. So again, for the next 2 weeks, we will not, hopefully, depending on my bidud, we'll pick up on Tuesday, I guess. Tuesday, December 20th. Okay. Shkach, everyone. Shkach.